Well, we are back in Jude. We're still in that middle, those middle chapters. Specifically, we're in chapter 12 tonight. Having covered the first 11 chapters.
You weren't here Sunday.
Oh. Thank you for baptizing me, Mr. Crook. Love, Erica. That's cute. Now we were, as we've been looking through Jude's, you know, he talks in verse 4 about certain men have crept in unnoticed. And so it's clearly Jude is writing about those that are undermining the gospel. You know, he said he wanted to write to him about this treatise on salvation, but there's a necessity to write to him, to appeal to him, to contend earnestly for the faith. And you know, exactly as the case is in most of these type things, even like the Colossians, where Paul is clearly addressing some heresy, you know, pinpointing exactly what the heretics were and what they were teaching is difficult. And, you know, and we find that frustrating because we want to know the details. But it's pretty understandable if you think about it as a letter, because the people there knew what it was. They know what the references are to. But things point toward that this is a fallacy that is of a form of Gnosticism, which has to do with knowledge, and that was popular at this time. In some settings, and we definitely see a reference to this in Corinthians, was this type of a way of viewing the spiritual life, that you made a separation between the spiritual life and the physical life. And the spiritual life is the, you know, what's on that high order, but it's spiritual. It's invisible. It's not tangible. It's, you know, in that sense of spirit. And so what you do physically doesn't affect it. And so that seems to be part of what's going on. And in verse 5, Jude begins to, you know, start this, and everything points that what he's actually saying is that, you know, don't be deceived, judgment will come. And so he says he wants to remind them that, and he gives these three episodes of that having to do with Israel, that after God saved them through with Moses and delivered them, there was still a judgment that came because they rebelled. And then he goes on and talks about angels that rebelled, and there was, I don't want to say a greater judgment, but the way it's worded, I mean, that there, you know, there's a... you know, it's clearly saying a bigger judgment. And then there was Sodom and Gomorrah, which that the judgment upon that land was still obvious at the time of this writing, and in that regard would still be obvious today, in the sense of that's a desolate place. In verse 8 says, and yet in the same way, these men also by dreaming, and that idea of dreaming isn't, you know, that they had dreams while they were sleeping, but, you know, that they're just dreamers in that regard. There's no reality behind what they're saying. They defile the flesh, reject authority, and they revile angelic majesties. And then that moved into that section where something they're doing is speaking against angels. And it goes on to say, even Michael the archangel, you know, when he confronted Satan, wouldn't take on that kind of a attitude. And so it shows their behavior, their attitude, you know, their character. And then verse 11 says, "Woe to them, for they've gone the way of Cain." We talked about that, you know, Cain, where, and exactly what part of the Cain story is being referred to, is it one part, all of it? But there was something about, Cain's approach to God was inferior, and the rebuke that came, and then he kills his brother. And then from there, talks about the heir of Balaam. And so here you have this prophet that, for money, for greed, he's going to sell a prophecy, or, he's going to, doesn't seem like he could really, that Hedon was one that was believing that if he pronounced these things, that actually happened. But if he'll pay me, I'll pronounce them. And then the rebellion at Korah, and this is, and at this one, it was, when they rebel against Moses, one of the times that actually the earth opens up and these people are swallowed up. And so that's where, that's kind of the description of these people. And as it goes on to describe them more, in verse 12 it says, "These are the men who are hidden reefs in your love feast, when they feast with you without fear, caring for themselves, clouds without water, carried along by the winds, autumn trees without fruit, doubly dead, uprooted, wild waves of the sea casting up their own shame like foam, wandering stars for whom the black darkness has been reserved forever." These are the men who are hidden reefs. Does any translations have something that doesn't say these are the men?
These men are those.
I'm sorry?
These men are those who...
Okay.
This just says, "These are hidden reefs at your love feast."
Okay. Is that the King James?
It's not King James. I'm not sure
what, what it is. Okay.
King James is, "These are spots."
Okay.
And the Holman says, "Jesus wrote them." Close. These are the ones who are like dangerous reefs at your left.
Okay. So, though, and there's a subtle difference. Some, if they say those or these, thee or something, there's a textual difference here where the majority text, has... doesn't have the definite article there. And so that would be kind of what Phyllis was reading, where it didn't have that.
English Standard.
Okay. And it doesn't make a lot of difference, but there's a more, if you see the definite article there, then there's more of a focus, identifying them. And in most of the major translations or the critical text, as they're often called, see that. And basically, when they're looking at textual variants, where a word occurs in some manuscripts but doesn't occur in the other manuscript, and there are some general rules that are followed, these certain texts that, because of where they're located and date, are given more authority. And that's kind of what the critical text approach is. And then the other one's called the Byzantine text. That's where most of them are. and some think, because if that's what most are, then that's the most reliable. But all of them have the same, after that, have the same viewpoint, is the reading that's more difficult is easier to explain. Because if you were copying something, you're more likely to add or leave something out that makes it easier to read than you are to add something to make it more difficult. And but most translations, you know, as we notice, are going with the idea that this is a definite, you know, it's looking at these people. Either way, it's still referring to them. But these are the men who are hidden reefs. That's what I have. And I think John said the King James had spots. What else did you, anybody?
It's got a note that says stains.
Stains.
It says hidden reefs in the
mm-hmm.
but it says stains.
And the stains actually go with the spots that John, does anybody have anything else? What this is looking for, if the reef is hidden, then, I mean, it's obviously looking at a shoreline, but if it's hidden, it's below the water. And obviously that creates a lot of danger, because you may not be aware that the danger is there. They, when they get above the water, they were referred to as the spots, or where the word stains come from. Because on the horizon, you can see the spot or the stain. And, you know, whichever it's looking at, you know, if they're totally hidden, it really doesn't make a lot of sense here, because in one way of looking at it, you say, well, it doesn't make a lot of sense, because Jude is saying these people are visible. you know who they are. Now, another way of seeing that is, yeah, you know who they are, but you didn't realize they were dangerous. But that's what it's looking at is, you know, if you think of reefs under the water, or maybe better, that you actually can see them skimming across, but this is dangerous. These are rocks in the waterway that will cause destruction.
What is it that can be translated as stains or hidden reefs?
Well, the idea that they look as spots, that they look like spots. That's where the idea of stains would come in. They look like spots because as you look at the water.
Like when you go snorkeling, you look for the dark spots.
In the light spots are where the sand is.
Yeah.
The dark spots are where the
reef. And this is that you can actually see the rocks. They were above the water. So from a distance on the water, it said that they look like spots in the water is what the idea came from. So it says, they are hidden reefs, or there are these spots on the water, in your love feast. Now, this reference to love feast is not necessarily a real common reference in Scripture. 1 Corinthians 11, where it talks about the communion, it describes it, that probably the same thing, but it doesn't refer to it the same. So here in 1 Corinthians 11, it says, therefore, when you meet together, it is not to eat the Lord's Supper. For in your eating, each one takes his own supper first, and one is hungry and another is drunk. What? Do you not have houses in which to eat and drink, or do you despise the church of God and shame those who have nothing? Well, everything points there that people were coming together for what we might call communion, if you would, but it really wasn't that. It's not that they were coming together to have communion by itself. It was not a potluck in the sense that everybody brought all their food. It was a picnic. People brought their own meals. And, some brought a hot dog, and some brought a steak. And some didn't have anything. And so if there's no sharing, you know. So if you had a potluck and some don't bring any and some bring hot dogs and some bring steak and everybody gets what they want, then everybody's, you know, kind of treated the same. But if you bring it as a picnic individually, then, you know, some people are left out depending on where their economic status is. And that's what he's referring to. But it doesn't say love feast. But that seems to be the reference here. It's not just communion. These meals, and it seemed, you know, was probably patterned off the idea of Passover and where communion came from, where there was a whole meal. And so it's a fellowship time. Well, they're coming together for that fellowship time here that's referred to as a love feast. And these are these hidden reefs, these spots on the water, these dangerous things. In the love feast, when they feast with you without fear, without reverence, without care, it would seem that what Jude is describing here is they come to these settings, which you've already seen a downside of them, as Paul talks about. Wouldn't have to have a downside, but Paul talks about one there. But these, they come together and they seem to not be into it from the standpoint of the spiritual fellowship or the interaction, but they're off by themselves with their feast. It says, and it's interesting, they're hidden reefs in your love feast, and when they feast with you, without fear, without reverence. So exactly what's going on seems hard to me, but, you know, perhaps, and what's suggested is that they're separating themselves and having this grand feast, and there really isn't any care about anyone. You know, so the focus is that they're together, they're there, and they are involved in these feasts, but there's no reverence, there's no concern, there's no respect in that regard. Caring for themselves, so, and that would where that would come in. They're only about themselves. You know, the interesting passage in Philippians, where I find it always very interesting, Paul says, and it's about this passage on humility and so forth, but he says, you know, not merely looking out for yourself. You know, he doesn't say, don't look out for yourself. But when you're merely looking out for yourself, when you have nobody else's interest. So, I mean, in some sense, we ought to look out for ourselves. I mean, you ought to be careful. You ought to make sure things are, you know, right and so forth. You know, you can't live with total disregard for yourself. But when you only look out for yourself, that's called being selfish. And here they are, caring only for themselves. There are five of these metaphors here, and they're all from nature. So the first has to do with this idea of rocks. Rocks in the water that are dangerous. So just as reefs in the water, rocks in the water are a danger, Judas said, hey, that's how you ought to regard these people. You know, they come to these feasts, you know, just like a line to shore looks safe, looks, but it's not. It's dangerous. These people are here at these events, but it's really a danger. They're only caring about themselves. They're not involved with anybody else. The second one has to do with clouds. It says, clouds without water, carried along by winds. Well, I don't know, we have a lot of clouds that, quote, are without water. So I don't know that every time we see a cloud we think of, oh, it's going to rain. But evidently in some parts of the world, it may have to do when, you know, closer to bodies of water or whatever, there are clouds that look more like they would contain water, not the light. Fluffy white clouds up there that we know are never going to rain. They're just, you hope they get in the way of the sun, give you a little shade. But these look like, you know, may rain, but they don't rain. They just pass over. And I'm sure there are places, you know, in the United States where you have these dry areas and they have clouds like that that pass over. For whatever reason, the way the topography is, it just, you know, it happens. Not with clouds of rain, but where I grew up in my hometown, and we had tornado warnings all the time, but I don't remember a tornado ever hitting anything in that area. I remember in high school there was, not that I saw it because I was gone that day, but there was one that was like 2 miles out of town or a mile outside of town that all the students that were there saw this tornado. But if you go, east of Farwell, about 60 miles, there's an area that was always hit by tornadoes. So these tornadoes came out of New Mexico, out of the west. They come across Farwell, and they go a ways, and then they come down and hit that area. And they, every year, there were tornadoes that hit that area. And there's a couple of towns there that have been, you know, significant tornadoes have hit there. Well, not that that has anything to do with clouds of, but you have areas that I'm sure that happens to with rain also. With the rain, the you know, because of the climate, the air flows, whatever, these clouds move over and they never rain. It looks like rain, but it never rains. It goes somewhere else and, you know, they get flooded. Well, that he's saying that's what, here's this promise. Oh, it's going to rain. You know, finally relief. Here's the water coming. It never rains. They're just blown away by the wind. They look promising. You know, this teaching, these people, they keep saying they're going to give you something, but it's always empty. There's a promise, but nothing is really there. Then third, autumn trees without fruit, doubly dead, uprooted. You know, here, it probably is not a reference to that these are, you know, trees, you know, you've had your season when all the fruit was there and the fruit's all been picked and now it's approaching winter and everything's kind of, you know, dormant. That's probably not the reference. It's, you know, these are these trees, autumn trees, but they've never produced. They don't produce fruit. They're fruitless trees. And on top of that, they're uprooted now. I mean, these trees are worthless and they've been pulled out of the ground and they're just laying there. And the only thing they're going to be good for now is somebody to chop up and make a firewood out of. You know, they're uprooted. They're doubly dead. They're, you know, some figure of speech. I mean, obviously something's not doubly dead, but just that emphasis that it's, you know, it's dead. It's, you know, and I'm not even, you know, I love the idea of figures of speech. And I'd like to, this summer I was trying to find some books that trace figures of speech, but so I have no clue where the, you know, I've always heard in my life, you know, dead or in a doornail. Well, I don't know why doornail, what a doornail is as opposed to some other nail. And why is a door nail dead as opposed to the nail in, you know, the next board in the house? I mean, I don't know what that reference is to, but we get the idea when we hear it, even if we don't know what it's referring to. And that's the concept here, is, you know, the doubly dead. It's dead. It may also have that kind of a reference of spiritually and physically by saying doubly. But there's no fruit. They're fruitless. This tree is worthless. So it starts off, there's a danger. You know, it's like a reef in the water. It's dangerous. The next is, it's just hot air. It's just a promise, but no results. And then now, it's beyond that, it's worthless. It's worthless. When fourth, wild waves of the sea, casting up their own shame like foam. Well, I have seen places, both pictures and just observed this. It doesn't have to be like at an ocean, which I haven't been around the oceans very much. I've been around the Gulf a few times. But you see this on lakes. You know, there's those certain shorelines where it's real clear and pretty for whatever reason. But you also see some of these places where the waves come up and all the trash gets trapped in there. And you see this kind of foamy stuff and all this trash. And that's what it's looking at. There's something here. There's not this beautiful beach where, you know, all the waves are coming up and it's all the, you know, the white sand. But this is that part where it's just beating and it's throwing all the trash up and it keeps just kind of circling back and forth, builds up this foam and you know, creepy looking area. And he relates to this as that's their own shame. They, you know, this is a picture of their shame. And then fourth, he says, wandering stars for whom the black darkness has been reserved forever. The wandering stars, I mean, stars have a pattern, but possibly it's referring to planets, because planets would not, while there is a pattern to planets, it wouldn't be the same as the stars. It's going to alternate, and so it might be observed as that they move around, they wander. More likely, it would seem, like the reference would be to, you know, what we'd call a shooting star, or, you know, could be a meteor, a comet, or something. And especially, you know, the rest of this makes sense to me, thinking about the shooting star, is that it just goes streaking across. It's this wandering star in that regard, but it just goes into nothingness. Now, I guess from our now perspective, if it was really a shooting star, it's something that has entered into the atmosphere and it burns up. But the idea that it wanders off into nothingness, and that seems to be the description here, that they're wandering stars, that there's not a stability that you can follow. And it's, there's, you know, away from light, it's just this blackness, and it just is engulfed. So anyway, here are these five descriptions of these people. Now, we've gone through several different kinds of descriptions, and it's this one of, not really a description of them, but the verses 5 to 7 is much more of a sense of, you know, do you think they will escape judgment? I mean, God has judged in a variety of ways. And then again, that same thing comes up in verse 11. You know, here's their error. And then here, this seems to be very much a description of who they are. And if you want to describe it, and Paul does, or I mean, Jude does it here in five kind of natural figures of speech, metaphors. One has to do with rocks below the water. They're dangerous. One has to do with clouds that never rain. It's empty promises. Another one has to do with autumn trees. You know, these trees that don't bear fruit, actually aren't even alive anymore. They have no leaves. They have no fruit. Actually, they're not even attached to the ground anymore. These are just worthless. The only thing a tree like that is good for is you know, wood. If you chopped it up and burn it, or could make it into lumber. But as a tree, as being a live tree, it has no purpose at all because it's not alive. And the wild waves. You know, this is kind of a collection of debris, it's dirt, it's filth, it's all the trash, and they're saying this is depictive of their shame. And then wandering stars, that there's really not a pattern, there's really nothing there to be trusted, and it just goes off and disappears. That's a pretty bleak description if you're describing people. And so that's what he does at this point. What do you have? Thoughts or questions or insights?